So when we practice, we have a lot of humility. However, this is just a superficial humility. It is just a respectful humility. It is not the great belief and respect that we have when we realize the true nature of mind. This is not something that is superficial. When we are one with the Guru, when we just see the picture or a tanka of the Guru, when we just think of the Guru, there is no way to express this great gratitude and belief in the Guru. And what type of person is this? Is the person that through the practice, they have truly realized the true nature of mind. And why? Because they know it is only through knowing the Guru and practicing the pith instructions given by the Guru that they have realized the true nature of mind. And before that, for all of the time that I practiced or received the Dharma, I didn't attain realization. But because of the guidance and the pith instruction of the Guru, they have been able to do this, and so then they really have unmoving belief in the Guru. And in the moment that they think of the Guru, they themselves enter into the true nature of mind. To just see the Guru, hear the voice of the Guru, right there and then, they are already abiding in the true nature of mind. And this is the great power, the energy of belief in the Guru. When we just have this mind that says, oh, thank you, Guru, for all of your compassion and all of your teachings. This is just a very simple kind of belief. It's a very common belief. Really true, profound belief in faith is that through the instructions of the Guru and one's own practice, we have realized the true nature of mind. And at this stage, as we think about the Guru, at the same time we enter into the true nature of mind. It happens simultaneously. When we just hear the Guru's voice, at the same time, simultaneously, we enter into the true nature of mind. And when we just look at the external environment, we think of the Guru and enter into the true nature of mind. I mean, I did look at the ocean, I think of the great merits of the great Guru, and at the same time enter into the state of the true nature of mind. And when we just look at the external environment, whatever it is, at the same time, it'll remind us of the Guru and bring us to the true nature of mind. And when we have received the pith instruction, and we just think of that pith instruction, or we apply it, then everything that appears externally just becomes the motivation to turn us towards the true nature of mind. And are the pith instructions to help us abide in the true nature of mind. Everything that happens is like this. And when this is the case, then we can say we are one with the Guru. And this is really the ultimate belief or thinking of the Guru, being one with the Guru. This is being one with the Guru, in union with the Guru, inseparable from the Guru. And this is because the Guru has step by step, drop by drop, given us the nectar to transform us ignorant sentient beings. Always waiting for us to attain Buddhahood, accompanying us, always pulling us along, supporting us. Who has this kind of patience? Only these enlightened Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They have this incredible patience and merit. And so we can really see it is so important to find and to follow the guidance of an enlightened Guru. And most important, once we found the Guru, is that we request for and we practice these pith instructions. And these pith instructions are the Trekchul pith instructions and the Togal pith instructions. And in our lineage, we practice the oral pith instructions of Longso and Longchen Yintik. And the Togal practices of that of Jigme Lingpa. And practice these practices and receive the empowerments. And those students that have now finished the Trekchul pith instructions, they now want to practice Togal pith instructions. However, my suggestion to you is that it is still a little bit early to start this. It is better that first you stabilize this state of realization that you have in terms of practicing the Trekchul pith instructions. It is that you have recognized the true nature of mind, however, your ability to maintain the state of the true nature of mind still needs some work, needs improvement, or needs to be stabilized. That you're able to do this night and day, and that you're able to see the luminosity of the dreams. Once you have this every day, then I think it's suitable for you to practice the Togal practices. We might think that if I haven't received these Trekcho and Togal pit instructions, what am I going to do when I'm facing death? Don't worry about this. I think what is important is that we just know that there are two different methods. Togal is to attain rainbow body, and Trekcho is to attain Buddhahood in this very lifetime. And if already you can attain enlightenment in this lifetime, this is really already quite incredible. And for those that want to practice Togal, my suggestion is first that you attain stable realization in the luminosity of dreams that you can do every night, and then start to practice Togal. And go on retreats, maybe 1 year, 1 month, 2 months, and then at least 100-day retreat. And for the Trekcho, you can go into retreat for 3 days or 6 days. However, for the Togal, you practice the pit instructions, which we won't teach now, and you look at the sun for a 100-day retreat. And first, before we receive the pit instructions, then we should establish a very good foundation in the study and reflection and in practice. And for those that already have received the Trekcho pit instructions, then keep on practicing, establish a stable practice in recognizing the true nature of mind and maintaining it during the day and recognizing the luminosity of the dreams at night. And then you are starting to get what we might say is the standard for me being able to start practicing Togal. And does this standard apply to everybody? No, there are some people that maybe don't have the standard. If everybody has the standard of knowing the luminosity of dreams, then this would be really too incredible. However, this is the requirement as required by the lineage as it started from Longchenpa to Jingme Lingpa to Gyalwe Nyugu Rinpoche, Patril Rinpoche, Kenpo Ngajang, down to His Holiness Jingme Ponsok, His Holiness Lama Achuk Rinpoche, all had these requirements. These are the past requirements, and in these current days, how many people are able to achieve these requirements? There are some that can. And then we think, is it only then we're allowed to attain empowerment? No, we can receive empowerments before. This is quite simple. We can receive empowerments before we go on retreat. What's important is that within the Togal practices, there are many practice pith instructions. And so the teachers will provide or give the empowerments. However, they know that you haven't stabilized your practice and maybe even haven't requested all the Trekcho pith instructions. So then they won't teach you the pith instructions of Togal. And so really for many of us, the ultimate pith instructions, those are the Trekcho and the Togal we haven't received yet. So what we've got is maybe a box, but we haven't got all the things that go into the box yet. The very essential, like the marrow of the bone pith instructions. And the teachers look at the arising causes, and so for many, they don't teach. They don't teach in the mainland China. They don't teach in the Tibetan areas either. People ask me, then why is it that I am teaching them? Well, because His Holiness Lama Achuk Rinpoche told me I must transmit these pith instructions, and if I don't, I am going against his wishes. And it's not to everybody that I teach. I only teach once the students have already finished the outer and inner preliminary practices. If you haven't done this, the study, reflection, and practice, and the outer and inner preliminaries, then we won't transmit to you these pith instructions. And so there really is a standard before we can, that is required before we can transmit these pith instructions, not just whoever comes that may receive them. If you've only studied for maybe 2 or 3 years, you haven't finished your outer and inner preliminaries, then it's not permitted that you receive these pith instructions. It's only when you've finished the preliminary practices and study and reflection for all of those dharmas that maybe we enter into the dharma with, then afterwards we can transmit pith instructions to you. And these are the standards requested or set out by His Holiness Lama Achuk Rinpoche. In the past, in the Tibetan areas, if we just heard that somebody had received even just one of these pith instructions, we used to think this was just really, really incredible. It didn't matter if it was being received from His Holiness Lama Ajuk Rinpoche or any great master. People used to think this is, wow, something that is so rare. It's not something we often hear about. And now many of these great lamas have got into Parinirvana, and so now there are very few teachers transmitting these pith instructions. And so we have these requirements as well. We have to first finish the outer and inner preliminary practices. Then afterwards, we can transmit the pith instructions and the students can go into retreat. And now the requirements are not very high, but you can just do it maybe Saturday and Sunday. This is a very good opportunity and time to practice. Before, the Saturday and Sunday were the days we were listening to the Dharma teachings. Now let's change it and make it that we practice on a Saturday and Sunday. This is very good, having 2 days of retreat. And then afterwards, we can go into retreat again, maybe for 7 days, according to our current state and our family requirements, and if they all agree. And so for now, if you can go into retreat every Saturday and Sunday, this is a very good opportunity. Instead of wasting this time when we usually over Saturday and Sunday go out and engage in all kinds of entertainments. So I think if every week we can have 2 days of retreat, it would be a really great merit. And then after this, there really will arise many opportunities to have retreats. And if we can find a place that is calm and quiet to practice, sometimes it's not possible, it's difficult. Sometimes students are practicing very, very well and very diligent, but the people around them, even the people that are around them that are Buddhists, are very loud. Have you noticed some Buddhists are very loud? Oh, I'm this lineage, and what are you doing, and what are you practicing? And these Buddhists are really quite annoying. Some non-Buddhist practitioners are very calm and very quiet and respectful. And some of these Buddhists, they talk about this and talk about that. You've got so many discriminatory thoughts. Why don't you just leave it there? Why do you still have to go and talk about these things? If we carry on like this, who's going to be interested in practicing Buddhism? There'll be nobody left to practice. They say, ah, I've seen these Buddhists, and really they're so loud, and they have so many discriminatory thoughts and so many judgments. And then I've seen this with this teacher, and I've seen that. This really leaves a very bad impression. And even we have now these cases where the teachers are saying, if you want to come and listen to my teachings, you have to pay like 300 RMB or 500 RMB. I don't know what's happening outside these days. I still think that maybe the best place to go and request for the Dharma is to go to the mountains, to a place which is pure. And when you go home, I'm not too sure what Dharma you are practicing, whether it's good or not. When people say, this and this and that and that, it's all discriminatory thoughts. It's really a bad influence and leaves a bad impression. And then the people at home, they are arguing, angry, afflicted, and their afflictions are even greater than normal people. Is this meaningful? It's not meaningful. In our practices, it's good to stay low key and keep a pure mind and don't have to tell other people that you're practicing towards enlightenment or that you've attained enlightenment. And purify your own mind